I bring greetings from my family, and it's an honor to join my colleagues in welcoming you to Philadelphia. I come from a long, long line of Bacons who arrived first in Philadelphia in the mid-1700s, and I grew up at 21st and Locust Streets in the Rittenhouse Square neighborhood. Philadelphia today is a very different city from the one I grew up in, and many of the changes that have occurred were spurred by the work of my dad, Edmund Bacon, an architect and city planner, who was the executive director of the City Planning Commission for 21 years, from 1949 to 1970. Philadelphia was a 19th century city run by a Republican machine when my dad came to work here. And he was one of the key leaders who dragged the city kicking and screaming into the 20th century. I've been asked to talk about my dad's legacy in a few minutes, and that's sort of hard to do, but I'm going to focus on three aspects of his character and three places that demonstrate his work that I'd suggest you visit while you're here. My dad was a visionary. He taught all of us, his six children, from a very early age about the power of the vision and how, if the vision is strong enough, it will influence the collective unconscious and become reality. That was a little tough to understand when you're about 4 and a half, but we struggled. He was one of the Young Turks who created a model of Philadelphia for the Better Philadelphia Exposition back in 1947 to show Philadelphians the potential of their city. The model showed Philadelphia as it was at the time and then flipped over and showed how it could be. He wrote a book that is as current now as when he wrote it in the mid-60s, called Design of Cities. It showed the power of the vision of Pope Sixtus V, John Nash, and other leaders, known and unknown, who shaped the great cities of our world. Second, he was an experientialist. That's him in the stream in the Philadelphia's far northeast that he was proud to have preserved. My dad was passionate about cities and about Philadelphia in particular, of course, and he had a visceral connection with the cities he loved. Growing up, we didn't just hear about the work he was doing at our dinner table. We all went on family field trips every Saturday, like little ducklings following their dad to experience his city and his work. Our mom was there too, but there aren't two ducks in there, I know. It was quite a feat because of his long legs and his long stride. He thought nothing of walking in the rain or in the snow, day or night, or walking directly through a fountain if he wanted to show the power of the access. One of his most treasured honors was to be named the Rosa Parks of skateboarding by Skateboarder magazine. At the age of 92, he got on a skateboard with a little help to protest the banning of skateboarders who also love and thoroughly experience cities, as you well know, in his beloved Love Park. He was very disappointed that the cops wouldn't lock him up, but apparently the story is that they told him that he was related to important people and therefore they wouldn't lock him up. Love Park, until the ban, had been the internationally known skateboard capital of the world. Third, he was a doer. Regardless of the fact that he had control over a very, very small budget, he was able to forge extraordinary public-private partnerships to accomplish his vision, with mayors, with huge businessmen, and with the railroad. And this was unparalleled at the time. He's the only city planner ever to have been on the cover of Time. So while you're here, I urge you to visit three areas of the city that resulted from his work. First is Penn Center, where the massive privately owned railroad viaduct called the Chinese Wall, which was located on real estate that was considered worthless at the time, was demolished, and the area was transformed into the city's new transit-oriented central business district worth billions of dollars today. Second is Market East, Gallery Place, a major mixed-use urban mall that was planned to compete with suburban malls. Market East, Gallery Place connects with local and regional transportation lines and spurred the revitalization of the greater Market East area, including the renovation of the PFFS Bank, building into Lowe's Hotel, that you obviously know very well, whose future had been in question for a long time. and also the building of the beautiful convention center where we are today. Third is Society Hill, where instead of some slum clearance, the largest collection of colonial homes in America were renovated. Three dramatic residential towers designed by I.M. Pei were built to establish a highly visible icon in the area and to bring density and new vigor to the area. A lovely greenway system also was created that winds through the neighborhood. My dad would have been very happy that CNU chose Philadelphia for CNU 15 and that this conference is focusing on urbanism, whether new or old. He would have applauded CNU for your pivotal role in Hope 6. My dad abhorred the public housing projects that were imposed on cities and built with total disregard for the residents and for the neighborhoods where they were located. Needless to say, he was thrilled when I told him one day that my new job was to manage Hope 6, the HUD program created to demolish these projects that he did not like and build mixed-income communities that reknit the fabric of the city. He would urge you to work for the program's reauthorization in Congress. And I'd be happy to help that with you. Perhaps my dad's greatest legacy are the planners and the architects whose careers and lives he influenced profoundly. If he were here, I know he would urge the young people in the audience to have big visions, to fully experience cities and your work with passion, and to translate your vision and your passion into action. Thank you.
Next, we have an awards ceremony for the Form-Based Code Awards. And the presentation will be made by Elizabeth Platter-Zyberg, but I'm not introducing Elizabeth Platter-Zyberg. I'm introducing Peter Katz. For those of you that don't know Peter Katz, I would say, where the hell have you been? Been to virtually every Congress. Peter Katz was the first executive director of the Congress for New Urbanism. And in that capacity alone, he deserves great respect, honor, and anything else you want to bestow on him. Because it's a tough job sometimes, and I really appreciate what he did at the very beginning of the CNU when everything could have been lost in inertia or people forgetting to follow through. And I'll say that many, many people played a serious role in creating the charter. But Peter Katz was one of the people that made sure that it was put together properly, edited properly, and ended up being the document that we all appreciate and use so effectively today. Peter has written a book, as you know, which is for sale in our bookstore. And if you haven't bought a copy yet, you can wait till tomorrow. In fact, you can wait a little bit longer than just the first thing tomorrow, because our first meeting is at 8 o'clock in the morning. And that's for the developers that'll be up on the stage. And if you're an architect or engineer or something and you want to rub shoulders with those developers after that session's over to try to get work, you should be here promptly, you know, so you can be right up in the front row. I want people here at 8 in the morning. I don't want people to miss that. So anyway, I wanted to make that point. All right, Peter has been involved in developing the Form-Based Code Institute. The Form-Based Code Institute is dedicated to replacing the toxic separate-use zoning that afflicts America from shore to shore. And they've done a pretty good job of spreading the word. Things are starting to change. And one of the people that's made that happen is Peter Katz. Come on up.
Perhaps because of my past role, I've been pressed into service to do a bit of housekeeping. I've been asked to mention that tonight's session does get AIA credits, and you sign up for them outside the room on your way out. Don Power, you left your laptop at the reception. Catherine Johnson, you left your drawings. Sandrine will have both of those outside the room after this session. I did. There we go. Hold. Okay. Oops. Okay. Anyone who knows me knows that even with the plug that John Norquist gave me, I'm still going to begin the presentation with a picture of my book. I actually couldn't resist the opportunity tonight to wax a little nostalgic about some of the breakthroughs that we had in the early days of CNU and the new urbanism. I don't know how many remember this cover for Newsweek magazine, but it was actually a 15-page cover story. This was the article that put this movement on the radar screen for a lot of Americans who mostly thought the suburbs were just fine. The idea that there was a problem out there was news to a lot of folks. It actually was one of the first articles that began to organize some of the enemies of the new urbanism, but we'll talk about those in just a minute. We got this great quote from the New York Times, also, I think, quite a breakthrough. I haven't heard a lot from them in the years since, but this was a pretty good quote. The charter, you know, usually a nonprofit organization adopting a charter is not a big deal, but the Washington Post reported on it. And apparently, I don't know how Roger Lewis missed the beard in there, but I'll take credit for being the guy holding up the charter. We were very fortunate to have a lot of interest from agencies like HUD, from the policy community. And Henry Cisneros, speaking at the CNU in Charleston, was one of the first signers of our charter. And we were fortunate to enter into a strategic alliance with HUD and help them craft the HOPE 6 program that was spoken about early. And it's just now that we're really seeing the fruits of that effort. Indeed, from a policy standpoint, new urbanism and its sibling term, smart growth, really have achieved some remarkable strides. Here are publications from the Smart Growth Network, from EPA. And what's so interesting to me is when you look at the EPA logo and the National Association of Realtors logo on these publications, what really strikes you is that from a policy standpoint, the new urbanism really has won the war. Now, I don't know how many of you remember this famous speech I gave at an early CNU on the deck of an aircraft carrier. They didn't have my flight suit on, but I took a lot of heat for this banner that said mission accomplished. I think maybe it was a little premature to declare victory against the forces of sprawl. And indeed, the insurgents are out there and have been battling us at every turn. There are many, many obstacles to achieve. I don't think anybody in the world would look at a photograph like this and say, yeah, I love that big empty parking lot and that outlet center. That's not the problem. The problem is actually achieving this stuff on the ground. And, you know, when I did hand off the directorship of CNU, I really felt the baby was in diapers, it was growing nicely. The real challenge at that point is to deal with the implementation barriers. And the three big ones for me is finance. Those of you who heard Todd Zimmerman speak, he has a great phrase, form follows finance, and indeed it does. A lot of citizens just don't like that word density, particularly people that are moving to suburban areas. And finally, the regulatory obstacles. And that's what we're really focused on in this group, Form-Based Codes Institute. It's just amazing. And again, you know, Andres Duany and others have been pointing out for years the fact that the codes that are on the books in most communities simply won't allow the wonderful, charming places that we see in photograph when we go on vacation to Nantucket and other places like that. You know, the sheer bulk and cumbersomeness of the documents we deal with. I don't know who that fellow is. Steph Polyzoides took the photo. If anyone can identify him, I'd love to know. If he's here tonight, raise your hand. But the Form-Based Codes Institute really came about to deal with that issue. And form-based codes are not a new thing. Indeed, they've been around since the beginning of the new urbanism movement. Seaside, I believe, was the first form-based code. At one time, they were called graphic codes. because they used graphic diagrams. Other folks have referred to them as typological codes because they dealt with building types, even though there are many form-based codes that go beyond that. Here's a definition of form-based codes. And with that, I want to call my colleague Carol Wyant to the stage. Carol and I both share the tasks of running this organization, but Carol's the one that really does the real work. I get to stand up here and take some credit, but if good things are happening from FBCI, it's more than likely due to Carol. She's the executive director. And I should mention, the term form-based codes actually came from Carol, and the reason we were using the term typological coding at the time, and she was putting together some videotapes of a presentation that some of us had given, and she said, that word typological just doesn't fit on the label. Isn't there something shorter? How about form? You're always talking about physical form. So there it was. We have a website. This is the address. Jot it down. On the website, you can see the long definition, the checklist. We have a draft RFQ. All of these things are works in progress, so we welcome any input that you have. The mission of the organization is research, standard setting, things like the awards program. We're trying to show that this regulatory piece, which is so linked with the new urbanism and smart growth, really joined at the hip, is an absolutely key component to achieving success on the ground. You can do it without a form-based code. Some of the new urbanists have valiantly accomplished that, but it's so much easier with this tool. I want to point out on the website, in particular, we offer courses around the United States. The next one coming up is in Fort Worth, Texas. You can go to the website and register online. That's June 14th through 16th. Actually, it says Dallas there, not correct. Now, with that, let's begin the actual program. And I do want to cite the support of the awards program from Richard Driehaus and the Driehaus Trust. Richard has taken a great interest in these matters. Liz will be talking a little bit more about him. Again, I'd like to introduce to the stage Liz Plater-Zyberk, who is the chair. Liz Plater-Zyberk, again, echoing what John said, if you don't know Liz, where have you been? Liz is the dean of the University of Miami School of Architecture, where she's taught since 1979. She received her undergraduate degree from Princeton University, her master's from the Yale School of Architecture. She is one of the founders of the Congress, along with Andres Duany, who some of you have also probably heard of, a partner in DPZ Town Planners and Architects, obviously a leader in the new urbanism. She co-authored the book Suburban Nation, The Rise of Sprawl and the Decline of the American Dream, and the new civic art book. Please welcome Liz Plater-Zyberk.
Peter. There's some primitive wiring up here, so we're plugging and replugging. It's a great pleasure to be here this evening and to present these awards. I thought I would tell you just a little bit about the man for whom they are named, Richard Driehaus. Richard Driehaus is a Chicago businessman, longstanding supporter of preservation projects nationally. 5 years ago, he established the Driehaus Prize for Classical Architecture given through Notre Dame University's School of Architecture. As a juror of the first year of that program, I participated in this year's award ceremony in Chicago celebrating its fifth anniversary. The winner was Jack Robertson and Ed Bass. Last year, the Form-Based Code Institute received a gift from Mr. Driehaus to establish the annual prize whose first winners we are this evening announcing. Richard Driehaus is indeed a hero for all of us who are committed to cultural preservation and community building. Once again, a juror in the first year of a Driehaus Awards program, I was pleased to collaborate with two other jurors in reviewing the submittals. And they are Paul Crawford, who is not with us this evening, and Rick Bernhardt, who is. Paul Crawford is a principal of Crawford, Moulton, Clark, and Associates, a firm he co-founded in 1990. He's worked with over 80 codes and over 30 city and county general plans. Paul has served as a director of planning and building for San Luis Obispo and in a number of other prominent public positions on the West Coast. Rick Bernhardt has been a town planner for over 30 years. He currently serves as the executive director of the Metropolitan Nashville Davidson County Planning Department, where he's been focused on creating sustainable communities, neighborhoods, and places through the use of traditional design principles. Prior to that, he was the director of planning for Orlando, and he's a hero for what he's accomplished there. The jury reviewed 11 submittals to the first annual Form-Based Code Awards competition. Four were selected to receive the award, reflecting the jury's belief that the first year of the program should exhibit the variety of conditions to which form-based codes are being applied these days. The criteria for the evaluation of the submittals included the Institute's form-based code definitions and the checklist of identifying form-based codes. Entries were received from Canada as well as the United States. Among the submissions, the jury noted a mix of building type and street type documents with attention to the street prevailing in existing urban conditions, while greenfields seemed to need both types of controls, both street and building type, to ensure a mix of building types and spaces. Three of the entries used the transect as an originating principle, and two used the smart code, showing its adaptability to local circumstance across a large and varied areas. In evaluating the submittals, jury members sought to select winners that merited status as a national model. But aspects of other entries also provided exemplars worthy of our comment. I will quickly tell you about four of them before proceeding to the award winners. Columbus Pike in Arlington, Virginia, is a project in which the jury applauded a pioneering effort to address the widespread problem of suburban corridor redevelopment, one of the most difficult urban conditions to remedy. Belmar Seaport Village in New Jersey is a project in which local political and cultural conditions influenced the presentation, content, and sequence of this ambitious and complete code. The jury particularly noted the requirement of deep and shallow building breaks that modulate the experience of block-long buildings, thereby addressing the issue of size in buildings, which is difficult. Trinity Uptown in Fort Worth, Texas, has a code which uses street types as the organizing technique and makes a clear distinction between mandatory and optional requirements. Another interesting feature of this is a green building incentive. And Rochester, New York, high-tech operation up here. And Rochester, New York, has a form-based code embedded as an addition to an existing city code. Entirely optional, this code promotes development in existing neighborhoods with architectural standards related to the historical design of the buildings. So now on to the awards. There are four. And their order in no way determines our ordering of them. Towns, Villages, and Countryside, St. Lucie County, Florida. The Towns, Villages, Countryside Code is a form-based document for managing growth in a still undeveloped area. In this case, comprising 18,000 acres with multiple property owners. While not location-specific, the code requires the preservation of significant amounts of open space, up to 60%, and also requires compact, mixed-use, pedestrian-oriented neighborhood development with a distribution of the full range of transect zones. The code demonstrates a hierarchy of concern ranging from the disposition of development at the regional scale to the detail of urban space configuration. The document appears easy to understand and to use. Would the representatives of St. Lucie County please come forward?
Good evening, and I would like to thank the Institute for this award. On behalf of St. Lucie County, I'm extremely honored, grateful, and humbled. My name is Chris Kraft. I'm the chairman of the Board of County Commissioners for St. Lucie County. This is Commissioner Joe Smith, who is the vice chairman of St. Lucie County. Looking at our youth and inexperience here, it may be why we're able to pull off a feat such as this in St. Lucie County. But a few of the things I want to talk about real quick is timing, leadership, and commitment to change. Having a board that's able to recognize that the time is right and that the people are ready for a change and have the leadership skills to stand up and say, okay, now's that time. How do we move forward? St. Lucie County, prior to Commissioner Smith and I being on the board, made that first step. Though we were involved with it prior to being elected, we followed it all the way through to its inception. The great thing is the people were engaged in this system. The people had over 200 meetings with the Board of County Commission, with the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council, and the wonderful team that was assembled. And that's where it starts. It starts with the people recognizing that they are tired of the urban sprawl that exists across our countryside in the state of Florida and across the nation. Again, it's the high-tech stuff back here. I'm dropping stuff. What I would like to do real quick is recognize the members of the team who are here in the audience and some who are not. First, I'd like to start by recognizing the staff of St. Lucie County. Second is the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council. Would the folks from Regional Planning Council please stand up? These are the folks who are called upon to assemble the team to put this whole project together, and they have done an absolutely wonderful job. Others to be mentioned, Dover Cole and Partners, Spikulski Planning, Gibbs Planning, Zimmerman Volk Associates, Dan Carey, ARCS Solutions, GMB Transportation, Tom Daniels, Innovative Housing. I told you I'd call that horsing. Housing Initiatives, Bayshore Capital, Terry Lewis, Lewis Stroud and Deutsch, Wade Walker. That's just to mention a few. And if there's any members of the team in the audience who I've either called their name or not, please stand up. And finally, a special thanks to Marcella Camblor, the Empress of Urban Planning in St. Lucie County and the Treasure Coast, and Anthea the Hammer Gianodius. Thank you very much, folks.
I want to mention we're having a rare outbreak of modesty among some of the contributors to these projects. If you see your name up on the screen, we were expecting and hoping to hand you a certificate, so please join the municipality on the podium to receive your certificate when you see your name up there. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. The second award is being given to Leander, Texas. The code for Leander represents the initiative of a municipal planning of a municipality planning ahead for development expected to result from projected transportation improvements. The current population of 17,000 is anticipated to exceed 200,000 as Leander is linked to Austin by tollway and regional commuter rail. The code is mandatory, and it is an effective customization of the smart code template, addressing complicated issues of Texas planning law as well as architectural standards. The code language is precise, and the jury admired the graphic design of the document, making it clear and easy to use. Leander, Texas.
I brought my umbrella. This was a Greenfield project. It was inspired by a mayor who had been inspired by Mr. Polakov, and it was amazing to pull it all together. We had seven landowners that footed the bill for the planning. I was one of the consultants. I was actually the only one that got along with everybody at the end, so they asked me to be the UDO. But it's hard to put all the moving parts together in a greenfield project like this. We're at the north end of the growth corridor, but with the transportation, all the transportation links, we think it's going to happen eventually. We had a council that was unanimous in its support, and we had help from the legislator of the area. It was pretty amazing how it was all pulled together. But we really thank you for recognizing this. We had came in with rock stars to begin with. You know, we got it all started with placemakers. They got people kind of fired up, and then we went through 6 months of negotiation. And the people that aren't here, the mayor and especially the city manager, who was the deal closer, you know, when the landowners started kind of going, well, I don't know, he would say, you're either in or out. And we ended up with it. Thanks again. Appreciate it.